I'm Sayer, and I love Marvel.
And I'm Kaylee, and I love someone who loves Marvel. In season one, we watched through all of the Infinity Saga in release order.
For Kaylee's first time.
And Sayer's 85th.
Now for season two, we're watching phase four, both of us with fresh eyes.
Sayer as a super fan.
And Kaylee as a newer fan.
No, cut that.
Welcome to MCU.
And me! Okay, we got it. In this episode, we're talking about 2008's The Incredible Hulk. And there will be spoilers. But it was 13 years ago, so tough luck. Picture this. Aerial views of Brazil. A man on the run. Trying to never get his heart rate up. He's got a secret. The people who are after him discover him in hiding. Bunch of stuff happens, a lot of smashing and CG. I think what we have here is a classic case of a 13-year-old is given $200 million and told to make a movie with his friends. Then he happens to be a big wrestling fan. Wow.
Yeah, so that's The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. I can absolutely see why you didn't show this to me. Second?
Yeah. In the beginning of this experiment, if we had gone Iron Man 1, which is a good film, but has its drawbacks, is a film of its time. If we had gone that film and then Incredible Hulk and then Iron Man 2,
yeah,
I would not have blamed you for calling it quits on this.
Mm-hmm. We never would have made it to Thor.
Yeah.
I would never have met Loki. It's a mess. Can I tell you my favorite thing about the movie?
Sure, yeah.
It was filmed in Toronto.
So like much Toronto.
2 blocks from our apartment.
Yeah, U of T campus. It's beautiful. It's like Hogwarts.
Yeah, and so that it was actually really fun to look at, you know, where they were filming some of this stuff and the beautiful buildings that they smashed.
And a couple actors that we know.
Yeah, Tony Napo is Brave Cop.
Brave Cop. That's what he's billed as. Canadian legend Paul Soles.
Yeah, as Stan Lee.
The pizza guy.
Pizza guy. Do you think that's kind of a nod to Stan Lee?
I think so. And it's also, I mean, this film was full of nods to other Marvel stuff. So Paul Soles, who passed away just earlier this year, was the original voice of Spider-Man in the cartoon.
And he's a Toronto actor.
Toronto actor. Mm-hmm. And then Lou Ferrigno is a security guard at one point, and Lou Ferrigno played the Hulk in the original live-action TV show. Also, at one point when Bruce is walking through Guatemala, the that piano theme plays, and that's from the credits of the original Hulk TV show. So this film is full of little nods like that, which are cute, but a good film does not make.
No, not at all. And every time you pointed out one of those little nods, I went, that would be nice if the movie was good.
Sure.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. I'm a big Norton fan, too.
That's what's so disappointing about this.
Yeah, it's like he's the ultimate live wire. Like, look at him in Birdman. He is so good. And I wish that they had kind of let him unleash. And I think that, in a way, that's a trap of playing the Hulk, because I think they go, oh, we're casting the Hulk, so it's got to be kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde situation. Mm. However, when it's Bruce Banner, he's just kind of mild-mannered, trying not to get too excited. But then when he's the Hulk, it's all CG. And so the actor doesn't even really get to do much.
Yeah.
So I think it was actually poor casting, along with poor writing.
Such bad writing.
Like, do you remember when that scene happened between William Hurt and
Tim Roth?
Tim Roth, thank you. When all of a sudden it's like 20 minutes into the movie and they're like, it's just a scene of exposition.
Mm-hmm.
And like kind of like an intimate scene between them too, where they're just like whispering sultrily into each other's ears.
There is some sexual tension between those two.
Yeah, live your life. But
they're both mumble actors and they have intense gazes and they're both wonderful, simple actors.
Mm-hmm.
But put those two together with bad writing and it looks like they're about to fuck.
And maybe like kind of bad editing too is the thing. Like I kept noticing in the scene with Paul Soles, too, it was like terrible editing. It just felt like such fast cuts between the two of them. It was just jarring, and it was oversaturated, like the colors were oversaturated. It felt like a cheap movie, even though it was like a couple $100 million blockbuster. This movie felt like a sequel. And I mean a sequel to another Hulk film. And before we started the film, you told me it's kind of like what they did with Spider-Man Homecoming, where they just kind of started after he's already been bitten by the spider, slash he's already been exposed to gamma radiation.
Mm-hmm.
However, I kind of feel like that's a more interesting story.
So years ago, in the early 2000s, there was another Incredible Hulk film just called Hulk.
With Eric Bana?
With Eric Bana, directed by Ang Lee. Mm. And I actually watched that one maybe 2 years ago. And while there are a lot of things that are dumb about that film, artistically, it's like, oh yeah, I see Ang Lee's fingerprints all over this. Mm. And they went for a vision hard. And it pays off sometimes. And that is an origin story. That is how Bruce became the Hulk.
And was it Marvel?
No, it was Universal again. Because Universal co-owns the Hulk with Marvel.
Okay.
But that's why this film isn't an origin story. It's because there had already been another origin story Hulk film. So they thought, well, we'll just kind of not do that. But I get it. It feels a bit like a sequel film, but we're meeting all these characters for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, there was the opening montage where it, you know, kind of spells it out for us just visually what happened in the lab when he first became the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I must say, this whole movie was just montages, though. It felt like one long montage that never ended. And especially because the scenes were so short, too, it was just like watching a little slideshow.
Yeah. I will say that the beginning of the film, after the montage, where he's in Brazil, and we're kind of seeing his day-to-day life, and he has the meditation training and learning to control his emotions, and it's kind of a little Bourne-like, where he's, we can tell he's on the run, and he's trying to blend in. In the first 10 minutes, you are getting it right. You are roping me in, thinking, oh, this could be a great film about just Bruce. Never the Hulk.
That's the thing. Like, it seems like a good idea when you introduce this idea. It's kind of Jekyll and Hyde. You know, he's just got to not get too angry. Not in this case, his heart rate can't get too high.
Yeah, we'll briefly talk about that for a second. That's a really dumb choice they made in this film. It's all about his anger. The Hulk becomes the Hulk when he's angry. But if you just make it about his pulse, and there's the scene when they're getting hot and heavy in the hotel, and he goes, no, wait, I can't get too excited.
Oh, big, I just laughed.
It's so dumb, because what I love in later films with Mark Ruffalo, his anger becomes a comment on, like we've talked about, addiction or, you know, controlling oneself. And anger is a very specific thing that he has to manage. It's not just about, oh, I can't get too excited.
Yeah, the heart rate thing, it's just a manifestation of, like, the countdown. You know, like, we hear the cue of his heart rate getting faster, and we're like, oh, no! It's like when the bomb's about to go off, and there's only 10 seconds, and they gotta dismantle the bomb before it goes off, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It acts in a way like a countdown, but it feels cheap. But, like, with Mark Ruffalo's version, it's the anger thing. So he has to do more like kind of inner work. It's not just about like physiological responses. But we went on a tangent.
Yeah, I cut you off. We were talking about a film that's just about Bruce.
Yeah. Okay. So it's an interesting idea when someone says, you know, why don't we make a film about the Hulk? It's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde situation. And yet I would rather go into like the psychological aspects of that, of like, I can't help but be this person if I get tipped over too far. The whole conflict becomes about him not wanting to become this monster.
Mm-hmm.
Who, by the end of like the existing films that we have so far, that's like something to be prized in him. So there is like a journey of learning to, you know, manage the Hulk, learning to live with this other side of himself.
Mm-hmm.
But the conflict is, it's dodgy. Like, the movie conflict, the story conflict is a little bit shaky when it's just about not becoming something that you can't help but become.
Yeah.
There's not a lot to fight up against. And so they introduce another villain in this like other kind of Hulk dinosaur character. What, Spinosaurus? What is that guy?
So in the comics, his name is Abomination.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he's a little bony.
Yeah, he's got little like elbow. He's got little weenus spikes.
But that's a really good way to put it. There is nothing to fight against when it's just about don't let your heart rate go too high. You can't fight against that because if you go for a jog or you get surprised or you get sexually excited, your heart rate's going to elevate. You can't fight that. Whereas fighting against something like anger, that is a part of you that you have to manage. That adds stakes to scenes where somebody's going to antagonize him. It's not just about, I'm getting too excited. It's about, how do I not respond with this part of me that we all have? We all have anger within us, and it's a useful tool sometimes. But when you take that away from somebody as the useful tool because it's only destructive, what does that do?
Mm-hmm.
That could be really interesting.
Yeah. It also felt far too easy for them to find him. It was like such a complicated scenario where he like cuts himself at the factory and then his blood drips into the bottle and then Stan Lee drinks it and they find out that it's gamma radiation. So they're like, that's where he is in the factory that made that drink. Yeah, I just don't know if a Hulk solo film works. I wonder, as an experiment, if we had a Hulk solo film starring Mark Ruffalo, who I love and I've loved him in all these films so far. If it would work. Like, could it work with even him? Is it just like a doomed setup?
I don't think it can work. And Mark Ruffalo has spoken to that in interviews too. After other films that he's been in, interviewers have said, so is there a Hulk solo film coming up? And Mark Ruffalo has said, I don't think a solo film would work because all that happens is just destruction. There's nothing interesting to happen when the Hulk becomes the Hulk. We all know he's just going to destroy things. So where's the intrigue in that? I think he works best when he is surrounded by other people who have to play off of that character instead of, let's just watch a whole film about this mindless rage monster who sometimes is also a meek and mild scientist who can't ever show any emotion. That's what this film was.
And then, okay, this is something I'm just working out, but like, there's an aspect too in the other superhero films when their superpowers are either, you know, their ingenuity or their agility or their strength, and they're conscious of having those things and actively choose to do, quote unquote, good or, you know, save humanity with those skills. There's something about that that gives us like something to, I don't know, aspire to, or like shows us our better selves or shows us like, if I had that kind of power, like how would I use it? Like it makes
power and responsibility.
Yeah. It kind of makes us reflect on it of like, how would I use those powers? Would I be like a Peter Parker? Would I be like a Tony? Like, you know, what would I do?
Mm-hmm.
And with Hulk, it's all just about avoiding becoming Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like hating becoming it. And then kind of like coming around to, this is something to celebrate about myself. Yeah, it's a weird push and pull. And I wonder if there is a director or an actor who could make it work. Yeah, it's not a compelling solo film. But I see why in the boardroom when they're pitching it, they're like, oh yeah, bring it on. It's so psychological. And then it just becomes a CG fest. Like the last third of the film, when it was just on Yonge Street in downtown Toronto, oh my gosh, I love that they were trying to make it look like 125th in Harlem with the Apollo Theater, but they just decked out the Mirvish Theater in downtown Toronto to look like the Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And then they left all the store names. So Sam the Record Man, which is no longer in business, and Zanzibar, which I believe still is in business, that strip club down near Yonge and Dundas. Those signs were still up. It's like, is it Toronto? Is it Harlem? Is it Toronto? Is it Harlem? And then there was like a reverse shot, and because I'm not watching any of the fighting, I'm so bored by that point, and I'm kind of just waiting for the movie to wrap up. We have like 17 Hulk screams before that. But they did a reverse shot on the street, and there was a Le Chateau.
Ah, yes.
Which, to anyone who's not Canadian, does anyone not Canadian know what that is? It's like where you go buy club wear.
Do some Canadians even know what that is anymore?
Well, yeah, it's now defunct.
Yeah.
But Le Chateau was, when I was in high school, that's where you bought club wear.
Yeah, when I was
like
in high school.
Like skanky gross wear.
Let me tell you, I bought a white fedora there.
Of course you did. That's where you go. You're like, I need a white fedora. I need to look tacky as hell. Where do I go?
Yeah.
Le Chateau.
Yeah, it's a terrible choice.
But it's so funny because it's a Canadian, now defunct business. And so they turn around the shot and show, like, yeah, so strange. And then like Massey Hall was in it. It was kind of fun to like look at Toronto landmarks and see Toronto actors. Like that was kind of a fun little gimmick. But other than that, I'm glad it's over.
It is a bad sign when the best part of the film is looking for familiar landmarks.
Exactly. It needs humor too. Like, was there a single moment of like humor or levity in the film?
No, they didn't write in jokes. And not that a film needs jokes, but no character in the film was lighthearted in any way.
Well, kind of Tim Blake Nelson.
A little
because
bit.
Because every movie he's in is a Coen Brothers film. So he's like got that kind of, mm-hmm. I don't know, he's got commitment. Even though I like, again, that an exposition scene with him where they were like, explain what just happened in the last scene.
Yeah.
And he does it well, but it was like, we don't need this scene. Also, he's called Mr. Blue and he's always in blue.
Like, I know.
Just a little obvious.
Yeah, like, I love Tim Blake Nelson. I think he's an incredible actor, but his writing was so bad. And it's so, so stupid that they tease him turning into another Hulk villain with the ooze dripping on his brain and it's engorging. They thought they were going to make a sequel. How cute.
Poor Tim still waiting for his phone call.
Well, and that's why I feel bad for all these actors, because...
Only William Hurt came back?
Yeah.
And RDJ.
And, well, I...
You said, I can't believe RDJ got dragged into this.
I know. That's what's so frustrating about that final scene is that the whole film feels like, yeah, we can totally write this off. This is not canon. Oh my God. There's Iron Man. Damn it.
Yeah.
Dragged him into this.
Well, and so when we were discussing whether we were going to watch this film or not, and we had a bunch of people ask us why we hadn't included the Hulk in our watch through,
mm-hmm.
People just writing to us or asking us, you had said technically... it's not considered canon. But now apparently you're saying that because of an upcoming film, it will be considered canon?
Yeah, there are more and more references being made to this film. Of course, as you said, William Hurt's General Ross. We saw him in Civil War, Infinity War, and in the beginning of Black Widow. And I'm glad he's back because I really do like his General Ross. I think he's a great actor. He's very subtle and he's commanding. I buy him in that role. And there is another reference coming up in a film yet to come out. So I thought it's worth having a look at this. Also, because I think it's fun to go back and look at another film that's at the very beginning of the phase of all this, before they knew what they were doing, before they had a real concrete plan, and to finally show you, this is the film I chose to skip because I knew we'd have to quit.
Yeah, you were smart. It's also, it's just so macho.
Mm.
This whole film, it just feels like it's oozing this hyper-masculinity. I don't really have much more to say about that. I think that you probably know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like a bunch of guns, tanks, CG of muscles.
And I wish that Tim Roth's character could have been more than just, I need more power, because he's oozing macho testosterone as well. Tim Roth is an exquisite actor, and I think there could have been a lot to be mined out of a character who is envious of the power of the Hulk, so he keeps wanting to inject himself with more and more and more power. Fine, okay, on paper, I buy that. I can go along with that for a villain, but it's executed so poorly writing-wise. It just adds to that oversaturation of machismo that you said. What I will say that I do like about this film is the score. I think the score is actually quite good. It's by Craig Armstrong, who did, of course, not all of the pop tunes of Moulin Rouge, but he did the orchestral new stuff for Moulin Rouge, and also for Romeo and Juliet.
Well, okay, this makes a lot of sense then, because what I was going to say about the score is while I didn't mind the score, like the actual notes and what was happening, I just thought it was relentless.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something I could say about Moulin Rouge and R&J, which I love, but they are almost entirely underscored.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you a lot of moments to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that with this, like it was so underscored.
Yeah. And in even the quietest of scenes, why are you building this up so much? Just let there be silence for a second. That being said, I like what he's writing, though. I like the actual melodies, and particularly in the beginning when he is in Brazil and Guatemala.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like it's a lot of Borny on the run kind of stuff, and I go, this is great. And then when the Hulk comes in, there is a deep cello sound. Boom, 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 boom. And I like that. I like that as a motif to continually come back to, because there is this deep, ominous pulse to it that kind of mimics a heart rate in a way.
Mm.
But that's like, that's kind of the only positive thing I can take out of this film. And I went into this viewing hoping that my memory was wrong, hoping that I had been talking shit about this film unfairly.
Right.
But it was worse than I remembered.
Well, and I'm actually really glad that you and so many others had lowered my expectations so much that by this point, having seen every other film, it was bad, but it wasn't as bad. Like it was
sure.
very, very bad. And it feels very young as a film.
Well, you said it in your summary. This is a film for 13-year-olds by a 13-year-old.
Yeah, but I don't just mean young. I mean also kind of like naive in filmmaking. Like it kind of is why this genre gets such a bad rap.
100%.
Just very immature storytelling where it's like, bullshit, 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 bullshit till we get to CGI. Till we get to like, you know, that stuff. It kind of feels like, you know, the prequels of Star Wars, which is like these serious conversations in hallways. Like, it's like, it's forgotten why Star Wars was good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can imagine watching this film the exact same way that I watched the prequels, where I was like, yeah, get back to the lightsaber battles. And with
But you were 10.
Exactly. So if I was that age with this, I'd go, yeah, get back to the smashing.
Exactly. It feels very much for kids. And who knows, maybe they were going for that. Like you said about the focus groups for Iron Man, that they assembled kids to do those focus groups. And they were like, which toy do you like the best? Or which hero do you like the best?
Yeah, it was about merchandising in the beginning.
It's easy. And kids would love to play with that.
Yeah.
Well, all the Guardians fans out there who have been disappointed in my evaluation of the Guardians films thus far and who have told me that they were disappointed, or even the ones who haven't told me who are out there, I know you're out there and you're disappointed. I have now found a film in this franchise I like less. I would if you offered me, hey, you know, on Friday, do you want to watch The Incredible Hulk or Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2? Guess which one I'm picking.
I hope nobody is ever cruel enough to offer that choice for a Friday night movie night.
I know. They better be buying dinner then. So obviously we've been off for a little while, taking a break from the podcast, and people have asked us if we're going to be covering the What If series.
And we will. But I think we're going to wait to binge that one and do it similar to our WandaVision coverage.
We will cover it, but we've been apart for a couple weeks because Sayer was in Kingston doing a show based on D&D, which was really cool and really funny, and you were amazing in it.
Oh, well, thank you. It was a live improv Dungeons & Dragons show. So in the park, we had an audience and then four audience players, and those players got to choose from the 12 D&D character classes, and then four actors, myself included, portrayed their characters on the stage and portrayed the action, what happened, all of the stealth checks, all of the attacks, all of the interactions with the shopkeepers, etc. There are sound effects and music. And
it went over really well.
Yeah.
You mentioned music. Who composed all the music for it?
Oh, well, a little up-and-coming composer named Sayer Roberts.
You.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And it'll be happening again. Here I'm plugging a show on our podcast. But
well, no, but it's, you know, it's what we've been up to. And, like, we started doing this podcast when we were very much, like, in the thick of isolation, in the middle of winter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, little bits of the business are coming back. But it was kind of wild to be, like, even if we wanted to record, we could have. We could have done, like, a Zoom.
Yeah.
And so we weren't watching the things together, which I think makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the future we'll be apart for one of these films, but We are going to a screening of Shang-Chi tomorrow.
Yes, an early screening.
So since the start of this podcast, this will be the first Marvel film we're seeing in theaters together.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do an early screening tomorrow.
Yeah, very exciting.
Whoa, you've been listening to this for a whole day.
It's tomorrow.
And if anyone here is thinking that we're going to spoil anything, don't worry. This will have zero spoilers, our little talk right now.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no spoilers right now.
So we've seen the Shang-Chi early screening.
And it was early because it was at 10 a.m. I don't think I've ever been in a movie theater at 10 a.m. Have you?
No, that was a struggle. Once I was in the theater, I immediately thought, oh, it's evening outside. And I wanted to get my blue light blocking glasses because it felt like the evening.
It was weird because the rest of the theater wasn't really open. Obviously, there aren't any other movies that are playing at 10 a.m. at that theater because they weren't serving popcorn. There was no one at the concession. And I was a bit thinking popcorn for breakfast.
Sure, sure. I mean, what else are you going to do? Also, peanut M&Ms. But it was wild to be in that. The whole space was empty except for people just to let us into that film. It was really cool.
It was
cool.
If
that's how all my movie-going experiences could be, I'd take it.
With also a not full theater?
Yeah, there were like 20 other people. That was about it.
But also, it was kind of a monumental moment for me being the first Marvel film that I've seen in theaters since we started doing this.
Mm-hmm. It's also the first film that I've seen in theaters since we started this.
Yeah.
It's huge for both of us, and it was really powerful being in that theater, just watching anything, but particularly this film. I can't stress enough how amazing Shang-Chi is.
Yeah, what an experience. It's visually stunning. Like, apart from the story, which is also fantastic, the visuals are spectacular. Like, it was just so beautiful to look at.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch this one again. We were actually finishing the film, and I went, I want to start this again right now, because there were so many individual sections that are so strong just on their own. Like, as a whole film, it's incredible, but there are such great acts in the film.
First of all, the fighting is beyond belief. Like, so much hand-to-hand, different styles of martial arts. Not that I'm an expert at all in martial arts, but I thought it was stunning.
And storytelling through the fights as well, not just flashiness to look cool. It really felt like old Jackie Chan films where there is movement and character development through the fights. You learn things about the characters in the fights. It's not just how cool can we make this look.
Right. And because, especially Shang-Chi, but other cast members are not in suits that cover their whole bodies, you can see their faces through it all too. So yeah. There's a lot of storytelling that happens through just facial expressions in the fights, which I find really interesting. It's one thing to watch, you know, Iron Man in a suit punching the ground to, you know, blast off whatever. And it's, you know, visually effective and stuff. But to see something that looks like a human, is a human.
And to really recognize that's not CG. They haven't CG'd that fight. That's two people or 10 people who are all so skilled at what they do. And watching Simu Liu do all of the stunts and fighting that he did for himself, I mean, the cast is exquisite. They're all such incredible actors. And we get really good performances in this film.
And let's pause for a second to just like geek out about Simu for a second. Not that we have any ownership over him at all, but it is kind of special to watch someone from Toronto just like up there on the huge screen like that, kicking ass.
Yeah.
It was really special.
It's kind of surreal at different times too, because there is something cliche about it, but just, you know, yeah, home team.
This means something to us.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the film. And it went in a direction that I was not expecting. And a direction that if you had told me beforehand where the story was going, I would be skeptical of how they could get there and make it work. But boy, did they make it work. I loved it. It was such a surprising film in so many ways. And I loved every single one of the surprises.
Yeah.
So as you said, we will be releasing our full review soon on the 3rd when it comes out. And in that review, very exciting, we have our first guest host.
Pew, 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 pew.
His name's Will McLean. He's a dear friend of mine. He is the owner of Pursuit OCR in Toronto. And he is also a giant nerd. He's kind of one of the inspirations for this podcast because he and I have conversations like this in our everyday lives all the time about everything nerdy, particularly about Marvel. So we thought, this is a great opportunity to have somebody else in on this conversation, just to do something different.
He is loving listening to this right now, where you say he's the inspiration for this podcast. Yeah, it was a really fun conversation with Will. He has a lot of knowledge about martial arts as well, which was really interesting to hear, you know, someone break it down in a way.
That was really valuable.
Yeah, I can be, you know, super impressed by all the fights and everything, but he broke it down into the different styles and who was using what and what they mean and the history and all that. So that was really cool. Yeah, he's also just a giant nerd and an MCU and me fan.
And a top-notch human being. I love him a lot, and it was really special to have him on the show.
Yeah.
So hope you enjoy him. And if you don't, then Will, you're never coming back. Yeah, basically, love this film and cannot wait for all of you to watch it. It is definitely in my top 5 MCU films now.
You said maybe top 3.
I need to watch it again because I need to confirm, but I can definitely say it's in my top 5. I'm going to watch it again right now. Let's find a bootleg. It means so much when you rate and review our show. It helps us reach more listeners, and it lets us know what you think. You can also follow along online at MCU and Me Podcast. See you next time!